If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
The long game can really be advantageous here. In the long term, the appreciation rates in San Francisco have always been sky high. It's really important to look for the short term and short term cash flow and all that. But keeping property long term, and many, many investors do, keep it in the family for years and years because our rate of appreciation is really pretty high. So don't forget the long game.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Chris Stafford is a 25-year listing agent who works with other motivated listing agents that want to 10x their income. However, we're not here to talk today about what it takes to multiply your income as a listing agent. Rather, we get to pick Chris's brain on what it takes to invest in small multifamily in the San Francisco market. That's a tough market to work in, and Chris can really tell us how to go about doing that. So tune in and listen to what Chris has to say on how we go about investing in San Francisco. Hey, Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much, Sam.
Man, it's awesome having you on here. You know, one of the things I've really enjoyed doing podcasting is that we get to run really all over the country in a single day as I get to interview investors and real estate brokers and everybody across the country and hear about different markets. San Francisco is not one we get to talk about a lot. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of things going on there, but for whatever reason, we just haven't gotten to interview anybody who's doing much in San Francisco. So I'm excited that you're on today and can kind of give us some, you know, ideas on what the market looks like, what it's like to invest in multifamily in San Francisco, things like that, as well as kind of some of your stories. So if you can tell us, as we always ask, you know, where'd you start? Where are you now? How'd you get there? And what'd you learn along the way?
Cool. Well, thanks so much for having me on the show, Sam. I really appreciate it. And I was a CPA in my past life. I worked for PricewaterhouseCoopers. And after 11 years, sometimes, Sam, I'm not that quick on the uptake. It took me 11 years for me to figure out that I hated that job, right, and I hated being a CPA. And I just, long story short, I went into real estate because real estate ended up being my passion. Became a real estate broker. A friend of mine got me into real estate, and I've been selling real estate in San Francisco right now for, I think, a little over 27 years, and love it. Absolutely love it.
Wow, that's awesome. I'm sure you've seen a lot of different transaction types. But more importantly, I'd love to hear kind of what the investor sentiment is and kind of what people are looking for. What are investors buying in San Francisco? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, so the investors have been really hot on anything that is, number one, two-unit buildings in San Francisco. There's a big reason why people like two-unit buildings. And the reason is because in San Francisco, which is sort of unusual, two things. We have rent control, which is something that is a big pitfall that you got to really be careful of. But the other big thing is in San Francisco, if you buy a two-unit building, there's a great upside appreciation potential if you condo the building. And so a lot of investors can automatically condo a two-unit building after a year. And there's some rules that you got to adhere to and all that kind of stuff. If it's a 3 to a 10 unit building in San Francisco, then you have to actually keep the building for 3 years and you have to go into the lottery. And the lottery in San Francisco is a bear just because they only allow 200 for 3 to 10 unit buildings. They only allow 200 units to be condoed per year.
In the whole city?
In the whole city, yeah. So, and the cool thing about doing a condo conversion here for multi-unit buildings is not only can you get great rents, because the rents in San Francisco are really super high, but you can also get the appreciation of converting it to a condo. The day that you go condo in your building, whether it's however many units it is, it generally will increase probably 10 to 20% of the value of the property.
Wow, that's incredible forced appreciation. What does I guess what and then investors are then selling off those condos individually?
Exactly, because a lot of times investors keep one of the units in the building and they just keep it as a pied-à-terre when they're in San Francisco or they live in it, and they sell off the remaining parts of the building. But yeah, no, it's a great strategy here in San Francisco, and that's one of the big things that a lot of investors have historically really been hot to do. Now, the whole thing with COVID has changed a lot of things, and there's talk of a lot of rules in terms of in restricting landlords and investors in terms of what they can do with tenants. And so hopefully that's going to sort of go away in the next coming year once we can get rid of this whole COVID mess. But that is definitely the strong play here in San Francisco.
Right. That's interesting. So what would you tell to an investor? Like what things would you say, hey, look out for, you know, say, I don't know anything about the San Francisco market. So take me as a case or as a test dummy. I want to invest in San Francisco. Where do I start?
Well, call me.
Of course. Yes.
I think the thing that you really want to do is you really have to take each building on a building by building basis because of rent control. What you really have to look at is the tenant profile is something that's so key. You know, I own real estate in other states, and I know how easy it is to get tenants in and out and how easy it is to sell and all that. In San Francisco, you have to be really careful with the tenant profile. Most tenants are paying market rent, but there's quite a few tenants that are not paying market rent. And that does obviously affect the value of the property. But we also have this thing here in San Francisco. I think it's unique to San Francisco. They may have it down in Santa Monica in Southern California. In San Francisco, we have protected tenants. And so there's like four or five categories of protected tenants. And that includes like if you're over 60 years old and you've lived there for 5 years, lived there for 10 years, excuse me. If you have a life-threatening illness and you've lived there for 5 years, what that means is there's other classes as well, too. When you're a protected tenant status, you can't get them out. If they say they want to live there for their natural born life, you're stuck with that person. So what it really means is the only way to get them out, and under the rent control law, the only way to get them out is you have to buy them out. And then sometimes they won't leave. So you can imagine what that would do to the value of the property. If you've got a two-bedroom here, and two bedrooms in San Francisco on average are renting for about, let's just say, you know, maybe about $5,000, $6,000 a month, and you've got somebody that's paying $700 a month and have lived there since 1957, they have cancer, life-threatening illness, it's possible you would never get that person out. And you can imagine if you have one, two, three of those in a 10-unit building, residential building here in San Francisco, it's going to really affect the value of the property. Those are the kinds of things that you really have to look at. And so it's really important when you're looking for investment property here in the city, it's really important that you look at the tenant profile up front.
Right. Yeah. Those are some pitfalls locally that if you don't know your way around that, then you can get burned in a hurry.
Right. And the other thing too that I think is really important, there's a huge, you know, obviously we have a multiple listing service here in San Francisco, but there's also, there's a network of real estate agents that handle investment properties that I'm a part of. And so a lot of stuff before it even hits the multiple listing service will get floated through this group. And so if you have, for instance, the hot property right now is if you had a vacant 2-unit building, no tenants, I mean that's going to sell at a premium. If you have no protected tenants in a property, that's going to sell at a premium, especially if those people are paying market rent. Again, going back to rent control, we have roughly, you can only with rent control in San Francisco, you can only increase a tenant's rent 2% a year. Okay, so that's not a big increase. When that tenant leaves, you can then have a new tenant come in, and that tenant would pay market rent. So you can see that if you found a building that where all most of the tenants were paying close to market rent, and then we use gross rent multipliers and price per square foot as a gauge for establishing value for these properties, you can see how that would really, really affect the value of the property.
Right. That's a really interesting thing. I mean, I can't imagine, like you said, if you find a 2-unit come online that's vacant, that's got to just disappear in a heartbeat before it ever, I mean, you're never going to see those come online. I can't imagine.
Yeah, there's a lot of those are being sold before they even hit the MLS, but because of the condo conversion rules, definitely a big hot thing.
What are some systems or what are some strategies that you see being employed right now that are allowing people to scale in San Francisco?
Well, what a lot of people are doing is we have this thing called Ellis Act. And so what a lot of investors are doing is if you're not going to do a long-term hold for properties, we have this, which is a statewide thing. Yeah, it's a statewide thing in the state of California that allows investors to come in and purchase properties and evict everybody in the building. It's called an Ellis Act. You got to pay them some money. It's an arduous process, to say the least, and it can take up to a year. But then what a lot of investors are doing is Ellis Acting a building, and then you really can't rent the property out for a period of, I think, 7 to 10 years. So now you've got this big building that's all empty. They're fixing it up, remodeling all the units, and then selling those units either as condos or TICs. And then you have to disclose that to a potential buyer. That can be really lucrative, but there are a lot of social stigmas around that here. And depending on who you're talking to in San Francisco and in the state of California, kicking out a lot of tenants out of a building is never a popular thing to do.
Right. But there's got to be some reasons, good reasons for doing that. I mean, people aren't kicking tenants out just so they can not have, you know, rent coming in.
Yeah. I mean, bottom line is, you know, if you're going to buy a $10 million building in San Francisco for, I don't know, 10 units or something, and you're going to pay $10 million and then you're going to spend maybe another few hundred thousand dollars LSACing them and then remodeling it, say, for another $500,000, and you can sell those things for $20 million total. I mean, there's a lot of money to be made there. You can't have a faint heart. You have to have time. And obviously, you have to have cash and some resources. But there's some pretty good returns that can be made there.
Right. No, that's fascinating. I don't know what happened, and we'll kind of take a left turn on this, but I'm just really just curious. What happened in the 08 market in San Francisco? Did it take a, you know, nosedive like everything else, or did it really, you know, kind of stay resilient?
We did take a nosedive like everywhere else, but, you know, I sound like I'm bragging about the city of San Francisco, but San Francisco is only 7 square miles. So, Sam, we're not really manufacturing a lot of new buildings. We're not manufacturing new real estate, and everything is built up and everything is already there. So what happens is sort of like in the 2008, when the 1989 earthquake hit, you know, San Francisco, well, the real estate prices will go down for like 3 months, and then they bounce right back up. Because number one, San Francisco is sort of an icon city. People all over the world know San Francisco. And there's still a strong demand that people want to live in the city. Now, the surrounding suburbs, like in the 2008, I was a real estate agent for Bank of America and Countrywide, and I did a lot of deals for REO properties, real estate that's owned by the banks, because a lot of people were underwater in their mortgages. So a lot of that happened mostly in the surrounding suburbs. But in the city of San Francisco, very resilient when it comes to big disasters, recessions, and all that kind of stuff.
That's great.
That's such a strong demand.
Right. And that's oddly kind of what I would have thought, because we didn't hear, you know, the news, you know, across the country didn't come out that, oh my gosh, San Francisco took a dump just like everything else. And, you know, here they are, you know, cleaning up the mess. So I just didn't hear that. So that kind of resonates with the story that.
Well, you know. And the other thing, Sam, too, I think that, you know, I think most of your viewers and realize that there's really no one market in the United States. There's no one real estate market in Canada. I mean, it's all based on local factors that are happening. And so you've got just a lot of small local markets. And depending on their industry, San Francisco and the Bay Area, we have Silicon Valley. We have a lot of high-tech corporation headquarters here. So we have the economics of our Bay Area and San Francisco in particular actually pretty strong. So it really just depends, you know, what's going on locally.
Right. What's either some bad advice or some mistakes you've seen people make when they've come, you know, to invest in San Francisco?
I think that probably a lot of it has to do with not really addressing the tenant profile and really understanding what the tenants are all about. You know, I think a lot of real estate agents push properties and they don't really disclose a lot of the information properly about what's going on with the tenants. And we got this funny sort of, I don't know if it's not really a law, but we got this funny system that a lot of buyers of buildings, a lot of investors are afraid to talk to tenants because they don't want to say anything or do anything that's going to come back to bite them after they own the property. And so consequently, a lot of investors are not really doing really good research and really talking to the tenants to figure out what's going on. That's why I always, always strongly recommend you get an attorney involved. If you're thinking about buying any investment property in San Francisco, you want to have a really good real estate attorney on your team up front.
That's interesting. Now, do you end up doing that interfacing a lot yourself on behalf of your clients just because they don't want to have those exchanges with the tenants?
Well, that's the funny thing, Sam, is that because for insurance purposes, I have to be really careful what I say to tenants. I can't go into a tenant's apartment and say, oh, you know, don't worry about it for sure. This buyer, this investor is going to keep you here. He doesn't want to evict you and all that kind of good stuff.
Right.
And then the guy buys it. He evicts the tenant. The tenant comes back and sues me. So, oh, yeah, I have really good insurance, Sam.
I'm sure you do. That's fascinating. Yeah, just hearing about that market. I mean, and so it sounds like you still think that for the stalwart and creative, you know, somebody that's prepared to deal with kind of, you know, a lot of bureaucracy, but also ready to reward, you know, reap a big payday, that it's still a great market to invest in.
Absolutely. There's no question about it. But, you know, you said stalwart's a great word. You, again, it's not for the faint of heart. You've got to have you have to have an expert on your team, a number of experts, but you also just have to go in. So almost sometimes for the long game, you know, especially if you're going to buy a large property in LSAC, that, you know, you could be involved with that project between doing everything, including selling. That could be a 5-year play.
Right. Which is not uncommon in commercial real estate. You know, a 5 to 10 year hold is I think pretty standard terms on a transaction like that. So it seems like this applies though to smaller deals, not necessarily maybe dollars wise, but smaller unit size than we typically project. Okay, that's gonna be a 5 to 10 year hold. I mean, sometimes you do hold things, but a lot of those, you know, they're easier to turn because they are, you know, it's a 10-unit property. Okay, we'll buy it, rehab it, and we'll sell it in a few years and make a little bit of money. But it's not like you gotta really have the long game in mind there as well. Let's jump into the final four. If you were to distill everything you know, and we're gonna make this very specific to San Francisco, distill everything you know in 27 years of real estate down to one piece of advice, and you were giving this to an aspiring investor, what would that one piece of advice be?
One piece of advice for investing in San Francisco is the long game can really be advantageous here. In the long term, the appreciation rates in San Francisco have always been sky high. It's really important to look for the short-term and short-term cash flow and all that. But keeping property long-term, and many, many investors do, keep it in the family for years and years because our rate of appreciation is really pretty high. So don't forget the long game.
Long game. I love it. What's one thing you're currently doing to stay on top of your game?
One thing that I'm doing to stay on top of my game at my age is taking care of myself physically and mentally. Working out like crazy, eating well, meditating, because you know what, Sam? At the age of 61, I need all the motivation, all the incentive, and all the energy that I can get, you know, get me through the day.
Right. No, that's awesome, man. I say it over and over, health is wealth. So, you know, if you take care of that first, and everything else, you know, generally falls in line. When it comes to giving back, what's one way you're making the world a better place?
Interesting you say that, because I wrote a book called Massive Abundance, How to Create Passion, Purpose, and Prosperity in Your Life. And the whole essence of this book is to make yourself strong in all your life areas so that you turn, you know, like a big circle, you turn around and give it all back. As a genesis out of that book that I wrote, I started a coaching group for real estate agents across the United States. And so I have a group, and it's called the Agent Unleashed Collective. And I love doing that. I love just counseling realtors to really be the best that they can. It brings me so much joy. It just blows my mind. I just love doing it.
Man, that's awesome. Good for you. Where can we find that book? Is that online? We find it on Amazon or?
Absolutely. And you can maybe put this in the show notes, but if any of your viewers go to theagentunleashed.com and just ask me for the book, I'll send it to them for free. And that's theagentunleashed.com.
Man, that's awesome, Chris. You don't usually get an offer for an author to, I mean, it takes a lot of time, energy, and effort to put a book together. So for you to give that away for free, that's a real gift. So thanks for doing that. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Absolutely. Go to my website, theagentunleashed.com. You can get all the information. And I answer all my own emails and phone calls myself personally. Love it.
Wow. That's impressive. Chris, thanks so much for the time today. Appreciate it. I've learned a lot and look forward to doing this again sometime soon.
And my pleasure, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.